Should I be on mute my speakers or only conference audio mute?
Oh, only conference audio only.
Okay, I think that's what I'm on now. I was getting a little bit of an echo when you were talking before.
Okay. I think we're good. And just a few reminders before we get started. A copy of the PowerPoint and all related files are on our webpage. I'll put the link again in the chat box. Also, so everybody knows, I am Molly Marin. I'm the webinar coordinator with the TAC. You will see Dane's name when I type in. Dane and I share the account, but it is me, and I will put my contact information so you can contact me directly and not Dane. All upcoming professional development opportunities can be found on our webpage. And I just want to put a plug in for our next webinar series, Using Universal Design to Support Tier 1 Instruction, and that starts on November 5th. Information will hopefully be up by the end of the day tomorrow on registration for that. So we hope you can come back and join that. That is a Monday series that will go over the course of 5 sessions. During today's webinar, please use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have. And at the end of today's webinar, we will share a link to a brief evaluation. Please take a few minutes to complete that. We appreciate your feedback. And for completing the evaluation, we will be raffling off a special book, Academic Vocabulary in Middle and High School. And to be entered, you just need to complete the evaluation and enter your information, and we'll draw from there. We are excited to announce the winner of last week's book, Nancy Kremen Greenville, from Greenville Central Schools. And Nancy, I believe you are on, so congratulations to you. And your book, if it hasn't made its way to you, will be coming your way very soon. So thank you. Today is our fourth webinar in a 4-session strand, Teaching Academic Vocabulary Across All Content Areas in Grades 3 through 8. Today's topic is Teaching Academic Vocabulary Part 2 with Dr. Catherine Stahl, who is a clinical professor of literacy at New York University. She is committed to improving student achievement and school effectiveness, especially in urban settings. She is currently the director of the NYU Literacy Clinic and has over 25 years of experience in public elementary and middle school classrooms. And at this time, it is my pleasure to welcome back Dr. Stahl.
Thank you, Molly. Thank you for all your work on our webinar series. We couldn't have done it without you. So as always, I'd like to see who we have with us today so that I can tailor some of our the conversation to exactly the roles that you have. So, and it's so wonderful to see a lot of return visitors. Oh, great. I'm thrilled that we have a social studies teacher. I thought I saw a science teacher there as well. You know, I really like it when and math teacher. That's terrific. So I really like it when we have our content area teachers, because this presentation was really designed with those content people in mind. And, we have some other leaders, school leaders, that can share these. And so I have a special today. This afternoon, I will be ending with a very special slide or two related to those people who are planning on using this to turnkey it. thank you. So let's see. Yeah, nice variety of roles. And then also to get a sense of how many of you have participated in the previous webinars. So I think that I have viewed vocabulary web 1 and 2 or 1 and 2 only, or maybe like at least two of the webinars. Or is there anyone who has not? Make sure if you haven't viewed any of them that you alert me that you haven't seen any of them. So this is good that most of the people have been here to see some of the other webinars. If there is anyone who has not seen any of the previous webinars, please complete the poll, because that would be really important for me to know. Okay, Molly, so we can go to the next slide. I'll get there. Okay, and as always, most of the information, or a lot of the information that I will be sharing with you today has come from the book Academic Vocabulary in Middle and High School, Effective Practices Across the Disciplines by Donna Ogle. It's a wonderful book. And then some of the other information that I'll be sharing with you today has come from the Stephen Stahl and Bill Nagy book, Teaching Word Meanings, which is a wonderful resource, by the way, for just expanding your knowledge about generally how to teach vocabulary. It's not as specific to the techniques as what I think the academic vocabulary in middle high school is, but it really gives you a nice overview of how kids learn word meaning and also some specific techniques for doing so, maybe a little more information about teaching the morphemes and morphology and the value of that. So, you know, it's just one more resource that you might investigate. So I always like to start with, you know, when we think about comprehensive vocabulary instruction, these are the four components that an effective comprehension instruction, vocabulary instruction program includes. Last week, we focused a lot on how do we actually teach individual words. That was a large part of our focus last week, as well as how to teach some word learning strategies. Last week, if you missed webinar number three, the last week webinar addressed context clues, how do we specifically teach kids how to use context clues, and how do we teach tier three words, which are words for which the kids do not really have the background knowledge to utilize the words, or they're words that are more complex, and also how to teach tier two words, which are words that the child knows the meaning of the word and understands the concept fully, but just doesn't really know that word. And today we're going to dig more deeply into some ways that we can provide rich and varied language experiences for students. And that will be our focus today. And again, I'll be highlighting that the strategies that I will be sharing with you are always best if they can be addressed, making sure that kids have the opportunity to hear the words and what they mean and have them contextualized, have opportunities to read the words. So the receptive is all great and it's essential, but it's not really enough. And I think sometimes these are the areas in which our vocabulary instruction may focus in our classrooms. And what we really want to make sure that we're doing is providing those speaking and writing opportunities for kids. And so when we talk about that varied experience and we talk about reteaching vocabulary and multiple exposures, the reason kids need multiple exposures to vocabulary is because they need opportunities to engage in all four of these ways. I do want to say a few more words about the dictionary. We talked briefly about dictionary use last week. In essence, we said it's not really the best thing to do. Typically, you know, we talked in a very general way about dictionary use last week. But it is one of the ways that we still see when we walk into teachers' classrooms, it still is one of the most commonly used ways that teachers use to teach vocabulary, having kids looking up words in the dictionary. So I really wanted to address it a little bit more fully this week. Now, regardless of grade level, you folks, especially those of you who are in the middle school, I mean, this was geared to people in middle school, and I know there are some elementary people here, but I think that any of us who are working with older kids, we might assume, well, my goodness, by the time kids get to middle school, surely somebody has taught them how to use the dictionary, is what we might say to ourselves. However, I'm of the belief that I really don't assume anything. And if I want kids to ever use the dictionary, particularly a hardbound dictionary rather than just on an iBook where you're touching the word and the definition comes forward, but if you are ever wanting your kids to actually use a dictionary, and I would say even a glossary in a book, that we really want to explicitly teach our students, whether they're in eighth grade or whether they're in fifth grade, we ourselves want to explicitly teach them how to use the dictionary, regardless of grade level. And this technique, this protocol, I have borrowed from Blackowitz and Fisher 2014, which is also, it's a book very similar to the academic book by, that with Donna Ogle as the first author, except this is geared to elementary. So the first thing we want to teach kids is when to use a dictionary. I know when I am reading, I do not look up every word I don't know. If it doesn't disrupt my meaning, my comprehension, and if it's not central to the text that I'm reading, I might skip a word. I might skip it. I might not disrupt the reading process so much that I'm going to go and use a dictionary. So we really want to be clear and teach our kids when it is important to use a dictionary and when we might not want to use a dictionary. Next, we need to teach them how to locate a word, and I think that might be something that is taught to kids in the lower grades, you know, how to use the guide words and how to alphabetize and how to alphabetize to the third letter. But again, in this day and age, I wouldn't really be confident that my kids in sixth grade had learned that in elementary school. A lot of teachers and classrooms are not teaching kids alphabetical order or how to use guide words. So if you plan on having your kids use a dictionary, and I hope it will be in a very limited way or in conjunction with other word work, that you need to teach them how to locate a word and how to use guide words. The next thing is the parts of a dictionary entry. What is it when you get to, when you finally arrive at the word that you have looked up, you know, what is it, you know, how to use that pronunciation key, how to use, you know, why is that part of speech, why is that important, you know, the different definitions, how come, why are there two entries for a single word sometimes? And so actually teaching kids how a dictionary works and how the dictionary, what are the components of a dictionary entry. And along with that, as we said last week, you want to teach them that because I would hope that if we really want kids to know how to use a dictionary, for some of our disciplinary units, we are going to be having kids creating dictionaries and creating dictionary entries. So we want them to know what is included in a dictionary entry. And also, what are the components of a definition? How do we create a definition? What does a definition have to tell us about a word? And the big deal for kids is choosing between multiple meanings. Now, Blackwitz and Fisher give a very nice routine for this. They actually put it in a chart similar to a Foursquare that we talked about last week. And so they put the word, let's say they're wanting to teach kids how to use a dictionary and that they know they're reading a piece of text and they know there are multiple meanings. So they put the chart in the Foursquare, the word in the Foursquare. Then they have the kids write the sentence that from the text that includes the word. Then they have the kids predict what do they think that word means based on, again, using our context clues. Using, if I look, or do I have any clues within and without the word that signal to me, inside and outside the word, what do I think this word means based on what I've read, based on my prior knowledge, what do I think this word is going to mean? And then I'm going to go to the dictionary and I'm going to look at the possible entries and select which of those possible entries comes closest to my prediction, and that is probably going to be the correct definition. So that would be the technique that you would use to teach kids how to find the right entry. And then the final step in the Black and Witch and Fisher model is that they have the kid read the sentence, go back and read the sentence with the insertion of the definition. Does the sentence now make sense if I replace the unknown word with that definition? Is that sensible? And that's the way they've applied that meaning to the word. So those are steps that can be found in Blackwitz and Fisher for actually teaching kids how to use a dictionary. I am going to caution you, and you know, we said that we really do not want kids are not going to learn the word and the dimensions of a word and the meanings of a word and how to use the word in different contexts. They're not going to know how to pronounce the word if we just have kids sitting there writing definitions. And there are a lot of dictionary cautions. For one thing, those entries are troublesome. They're troublesome in multiple dimensions. They're troublesome because kids don't know which entry to pick. They don't know the meaning. You can read that entry. They don't know what the entry means. They don't understand. Not only do they not understand the word, but now they've read the entry. And because it's a very kind of arcane language, they don't understand the definition. So what? That's not the best use of our time in teaching vocabulary. We can do it a lot more time efficiently as well as efficaciously if we teach it with some of the ways that we learned last week. As I said, vague, unfamiliar language to kids. And even if they understand the words, they interpret those definitions in very strange ways. And so the interpretations can be problematic. So we really want to be cautious and really only use this looking up words in a dictionary in very intentional ways. I would not really recommend it. So we'll move into some of the other activities that are more useful. And, you know, and so this is a continuation of last week. Again, we're going to talk about some varied ways and to provide these rich language experiences. Some of the vocabulary instructional techniques are what we call semantic relationship activities. They force kids to think about how the words on the list or the words that are our target vocabulary for our entire unit are related, all right? And so something like semantic mapping, which we talked about early on in terms of introducing words, and semantic feature analysis are two that we're going to investigate. Semantic mapping is something I imagine most of you have done, and it is a great way to introduce vocabulary, to actually get kids to brainstorm all the words they know about whatever particular unit we're talking about, or that we're going to be entering a unit of study, get them to generate the words. And then what we do is, after the kids have brainstormed the words in small groups, and they're sharing those out in the classroom, then we are placing those words up on our bulletin board word wall, and we are categorizing them and mapping them as we are getting their word list that they have generalized. And so we're actually mapping them in categories. And then this is great to be used as an interactive word wall during the unit of study. And then we're going to add and reorganize the map as you work through the unit. However, once again, discussion is a crucial element to the effectiveness of that semantic map. It's not really good enough to just you say, okay, I know I need a word wall, and I'm going to try to have a word wall up here for the unit. So I'm going to put the word wall up, and I'm going to put the words there, and I'm going to categorize the words. We really want this to be generated through student discussion. And we have research that individualized mapping procedures in which students study the maps did not work as well as group procedures. Whenever we think about vocabulary instruction, we have to be thinking about how do we get the kids to be talking about these words and be doing things with these words in small group discussion. And this appears to be particularly true for students who begin with lower levels of vocabulary. I would also say kids with less prior experience and limited world knowledge, as well as children who have reading problems. And so I tried to make this make some branches in each of these categories, but my slide had a mind of its own, and so it ended up not being in a map format any longer. So if you can just visualize, if we're doing a unit on meteorology, we might have our categories of precipitation, different kinds of weather patterns, different kinds of weather instruments and instruments that we use in talking about weather, and different kinds of storms. And so there would be subcategories under each of these categories. And so there would be words, and you could, as you study certain things, you could then go and add them if they were not generated during your brainstorming situation, your brainstorming session. Another semantic means of getting kids to talk about words and that forces them to develop semantic relationships among the words is something called semantic feature analysis. And this is a tool for comparing the relationships and features that are shared or are different among members of the same class. And in order to do this, you use a grid. Again, it's going to draw on student knowledge. Therefore, that is why I tend to like utilizing semantic feature analysis after instruction to help them clarify existing knowledge. And we actually did one of these. It just so happens that in my master's, my literacy specials master's class, we are at the point of vocabulary where we're talking about vocabulary right now. And so we did a semantic feature analysis among these, you know, young adults. And what was, you know, what they came away saying is, oh, gosh, I mean, and we did it about different forms of media. And they said, boy, talking about this really forced us to analyze why certain forms of media, multimedia, had particular characteristics or whether that defined them or whether it was an option. And so this, it's really important to have kids talk about this as and to design this as a discussion activity, not a worksheet for individuals. And then you want to leave space for students to add more members of the class and additional features. And here is what that would look like. So, for example, for math. So if we were teaching a math unit on geometric features, so you might have a list of these, you know, quadrilaterals put here, and then you would have the, so here are the members of the class going down the vertical axis, and then the horizontal axis is going to have characteristics or features of this class. And so, for example, in this class, it would be four sides. If we're talking about the group of quadrilaterals, our features might be four sides, all sides equal, opposite sides parallel, opposite sides equal, angle equals. And notice that I left an empty space over here for the students to add another feature that might be generated during their conversation. And I've also left a space or two at the bottom for them to continue to add additional shapes. And so now I put an X on here. I regret putting X's because usually what you would have here is not an X, but you would have a plus if the member has the feature, they would put a plus sign in the box. And if it doesn't, they would put a zero in the box. And again, this would be done. And some of these, not so much in this one, but in many categories, it's controversial. Like, for example, last night in the semantic feature guide that we were doing on newspapers, you know, one of the categories they had come up with is true, or it was like electronic, or, oh, you know, or is it participatory? And so there's room for discussion about that. And so I know that some of the things they said were, well, this would be true if it was electronic, but it's not true if it's a print. And so various things. So there might be dimensions that you're really exploring as you have these conversations. And it really is enhancing your knowledge of what makes something be fit into this category. And so here would be one that somebody might use in a chemistry class. Now, have you ever used semantic feature analysis with your students? It's a wonderful tool. It's a wonderful tool to use at the end of units to have kids really clarify their understanding and build relationships and discriminations between the items that you might have taught. I'm still waiting. I see that we have 24 participants, and I'm seeing only 18. We have a few more people who might want to share their experience with this. If you have no experience, I think that's fine. So, but, you know, that would be terrific to see so that we can get a clear sense, an honest sense of, you know, whether this is something new to people, whether you, and some of you may have been taught this in a college class or in another workshop. And so therefore, you know, the seed was planted then, but you just had forgotten about it. And so it's great that perhaps this will serve as a reminder for you to use this at some point in the future or to share this out with others. Okay, Molly, thank you. Now, the next set of activities are called and what I call anticipation activities. Now, possible sentences is something that you would use to help students anticipate what they're going to be, an informational text that they're going to be reading. Possible sentences also is a great relationship activity, and you'll see why in just a minute. The other two are to be used for narratives. Story impressions is for a story. It could be for a short story or a chapter out of a book. And then vocabograms is something that you would use during an introduction of a new book or a new story. So let's explore them more deeply. Possible sentence was something developed by my late husband and researched by he and Barb Kapanis in 1991. This is a pre-reading vocabulary strategy that activates students' prior knowledge about content area vocabulary and concepts. You can also read much more about this and see some examples on the Reading Rockets website. They do a very nice summary of it. So in possible sentences, before reading, the students are provided with a short list of vocabulary words from the upcoming reading. And again, this is informational text. I recommend, and this was pointed out to me by one of the fifth grade teachers who had used this, who I've actually got a wonderful video of her using it. And she had not done this, and she said after she did it, "Ooh, I wish I had put the words in two columns," because you want to have a mix within that 8 to 10 words. You want to have a mix of words that might be unknown to the kids that they're going to be reading about and learning about, and some of the words that are in the unit that are much more familiar. And so, for example, that teacher was actually teaching the circulatory system. And so she had put them in two columns, but it was just a random mixture. And so naturally, of course, what those fifth graders, those gifted fifth grade students did is they only wrote sentences with the words they knew. So you want to have the words in two columns. One with the first column would be words that might be more familiar words, and the next column is words that are less familiar. And then they have to pick one word from each column and include it in the same sentence. So based on their predictions of the text content, students create a meaningful sentence or two that includes two words in each sentence. Now, I did see an example on YouTube while I was investigating this for this presentation to try to find a YouTube video, and that fellow recommended 4 and 5 words. And one of my students the other night when we were engaging in this activity, she said, we were doing it about the solar system. And she said, "Oh, can I put more words in it?" So yes, it's certainly acceptable and commendable if kids can include more than two words in their sentence, as long as it's still a sentence that makes sense and it's not some kind of contrived activity to see how many words we can fit in our sentence. And I would say that if each student creates one, two, or three sentences before reading, that is adequate. And then you would have the students share out aloud for the community. A few sentences are shared with the class, and you would put those on chart paper. then the students would read the content material that contains those words. All right. And then finally, after reading, the teacher reviews the content that the kids have read. We look up at the sentences on chart paper, and during the discussion of the after reading discussion, there would be a clarification of the word meaning. And then the teacher would look up at the sentences on the chart paper, and we would model a discussion of whether the sentences are true or accurately reflect the meaning of the target words. And so then if not, then the teacher models how to make the necessary revisions to make those sentences accurate. And then the students check to see if their own personal possible sentences were accurate and revised as necessary. So, for example, for a grade 5 circulatory unit, this was how it would be a good idea to organize the words. So, for example, if what you're going to be reading about the heart contains some of these difficult words related to different kinds of arteries, different kinds of veins, where these things are and the function of them, then that would be, you know, that would be a good idea. People probably don't go into reading a piece on the heart knowing all this, or they might know maybe basically what a vein or an artery is, but they might not know the particular role of those particular kind. They probably would know the word heart, lungs, blood, and valve at this point within a unit. So I would put those less difficult, more familiar words on one side and the unfamiliar words in a column on the other side, and have the children pick. Make sure you pick a word, you know, from each side to put them in your sentence. And again, resources that you can to dig into this more deeply. The Reading Rockets plan and resources, the video, the YouTube video, which is where that person tells you to do, like they could put 4 or 5 words in a sentence. Have you ever used possible sentences with your students? This is very easy to use. This takes like no preparation whatsoever. No preparation. It's very easy to use this. So this would be an easy, like as you're planning your upcoming units and doing and filling in these instructional activities into the units that you're building. If you're one of the people that has been with me for all four webinars and you're building, this would be an easy one to insert into a unit. Could we have a little more participation? Because here it looks like 50-50. I would be willing to bet that there are many more people that have not used it, and I think it's okay. Let's please participate in the poll. If you haven't used it, all that's fine. You know, it's great to see that, you know, some of these techniques, which are pretty easy, you know, can be transferred in the future so that you can come away. I like seeing that people didn't know about this or haven't used it, because that helps me know that you're coming away with something new that you were not familiar with before. So I celebrate the yeses, and I feel grateful for the noes, because it helps me know that I have addressed something that you were not aware of before. Thank you. Now, story impressions. This is one of my favorite activities, and it is one of the favorite activities usually when I do this live in either with my class or when I come to schools. Like if I were to come to your school and do professional development on vocabulary, and we would do this activity, and the teachers love it. And this is one that people always walk away from and say, oh, I'm going to use this tomorrow. So story impressions, again, before teaching a narrative story or a chapter from a fictional text, the teacher lists about 10 to 20 phrases, depending on the age of the kids and the complexity of the story, whether it's a book chapter or whether it's a sophisticated picture book. You're going to list 10 to 20 phrases from the text sequentially. Unfamiliar vocabulary may be briefly defined for the kids. Then you're going to put the kids in dyads or triads. And I've used this from second grade up to senior citizens. So in dyads or triads, students predict what the story will be about and create the story collaboratively in writing. And I would give in a class, I would give them about 20 minutes to do this. You know, you don't want this to take up the entire period, all right? But you want it to get kids to sit down, read the phrases, and do a quick write of a story that those phrases might be a part of. If only one person serves as the secretary, the pair or the group of three kids are all participating in the verbal composition of the story, but they have designated one secretary to write the story down. Then the story is shared with the class, and then that they've created. And then the class reads the author-written story and discusses it using a comparison to student-created stories. So, for example, I'd like you to take about 4 minutes. Here is a story. We're going to read a story called Flu. And here are some phrases in order, okay? So you need to go phase illness, nausea, vertigo, diarrhea, lethargy, felt better, glowing limpidly. Limpidly means pure as water or transparent, clear. Aldo blurted, reception desk, odd remark, kept talking, she clung to it, fell in love, and haven't recovered. So go ahead and take about 3 minutes to compose a story based on that sequence of those phrases. Now, what I would like a few of you to do in the chat box is I want you to think about if you gave this activity that I just gave to you to a group of three kids to do, what would you say are some of the benefits related to vocabulary related and comprehension related of asking them to complete this, to create a story using these phrases before they ever receive the text themselves? So what, what are some of the benefits that you experienced even, and you didn't even have anybody to talk to, but when you think about your students doing something like this, what are some of the benefits? Okay, we see some ownership of the story, and they're really going to be invested before they get into that real story. Good. I see multiple attendees typing. I love to see that. Right. We have some good collaboration using the knowledge in a collaborative way. They're going to be more engaged with the story because they're going in knowing, asking, oh, I wonder if the story is going to be like mine or if it's going to be different than mine. Does it match our predictions? And it's going to build deeper meaning behind the concepts because think about narrative story structure. They're going into that story now. They are going into the story having created a story structure of an introduction to some characters, some kind of problem or goal. Then there are going to be some attempts to solve the problem or a continued plot evolution and a climax of the story, and then a resolution or problem solution, the solution or achievement of a goal. So they're going into the story not only, and so a lot of what you were talking about related to comprehension, engagement, ownership, and we didn't even talk about the vocabulary. Think about the vocabulary benefits they've had. They've probably, as a result of this, they've seen the words, they've spoken the words multiple times because they were exposed to them when I went over these phrases. Then they talked about them throughout the composition of the story. They talked about them when they heard them again when they were reading their story. And when someone else from another table was reading their story and another person was reading their story, now they've got about six different contexts for this little group of words. And then when they go in to read the story, that word is going to be a familiar to them. They'll be able to read it fluently with understanding. They've had multiple exposures to that vocabulary. Thank you all for sharing your input on that. So those are some of the outcomes. Introduction to the vocabulary, yes. Multiple exposures to the vocabulary, reading, writing, talking, listening. They've worked collaboratively to compose a short story with story grammar elements. How many of us still in middle school are still teaching those story grammar elements? An opportunity, and also we always are asked on the New York State ELA, we're always asking kids to compare and contrast a couple versions of a story. This is an ideal, fun opportunity to do that kind of comparison. And it's a perfect universal design technique for introducing a stretch text to kids who may be struggling readers, who may have difficulty reading this if they were just given a few vocabulary words in advance. So this is really, one of my favorite activities, and I promise if you try it, it will become a favorite of yours and of your students. Similar to story impressions is something called vocabograms. It's a little more structured than the story impressions. In vocabograms, students categorize new words, and they categorize the new words. They've got the list of words, and they basically just make a prediction about where they're going to see those words in an upcoming narrative or fictional text that they're reading. All right, so they receive the list of words and a story grammar frame or conflict types. So once again, you're going to divide the class into groups of four or five, discuss the meaning of the words. The students then categorize which words might be used to develop the narrative or explain a type of story or story conflict. And then the students make predictions about how the story will develop and then they discuss the vocabulary and their predictions. So similar. And so here is an example. So here is an example, and I'm sure many of you in the middle school are using this fabulous story, The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian. And so here are some, so if you're using that story, you could actually take this and use it. It's ready to go. So use vocabulary to make predictions about the text. The words may be used more than once. Displace, reservation, res, suspended, cerebral, Washington, elder, nomad, seizures, isolated, Indians, hormonal, Montana, Spokanes, funeral, one-on-one. And so now what the task for kids is in their group is, Where do these words go? Do they go in the setting category, the characters, the actions, the resolution? And once you have listed the words in the your predicted box on the left-hand side, then you come over to the right-hand side box, on the box on the right. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Michelle, thank you so much for telling everybody they can find the story flu. I forgot all about telling you where the story was. I was talking about the benefits. Because I'm sure your curiosity is all piqued as well about the story flu. So, yes, I put that in your set of materials. Thank you, Michelle. All right. So over here in the right column, after they have listed their anticipated words in each that provide cues to each of these parts of a story, then over on the right side, they actually do make some predictions about the story. And then down here, some questions they might have or words that they were unsure of where to put. So you see, this is similar in some ways to story impressions, but somewhat different. But it's again what I call one of those anticipation activities that develops vocabulary, that gives kids multiple exposures to vocabulary, talking it, reading it, writing it, hearing it before they ever encounter it in the story. Have you ever used story impressions or vocabigrams with your students? So those are two different techniques that you could use. Good. I hope this is a new tool in almost everyone's toolbox. These are some new tools in your toolbox. Terrific. And as we said, you know, the story for story impressions and flu and actual directions for how to do this can all be found in your materials folder. Thank you so much, Michelle. Okay, so let's go to our next activity. Oh, my goodness, time has flown today. Time has really flown. Okay, so here are our big idea takeaways. Here are our big idea takeaways. Teaching word meanings. There is a wonderful, wonderful article that I hope you can get your hands on, this article by Wright and Cervetti. It's in the Reading Research Quarterly in 2016, and it's a meta-analysis of academic vocabulary, or of teaching vocabulary and comprehension and the relationship. And it's a meta-analysis of studies from like the last 60 years. And so what they have found, and I wanted to put it in our folder. I have it at home in my own, I have it on my computer in my folder, but I knew that would be a violation of copyright and I'd be breaking the rules if I put it in a folder on the internet, so I did not feel comfortable doing that. But if any of you are interested in this article, feel free to request it from me, and I'll be happy to share it with you. Teaching word meanings, what they found from this big meta-analysis is that if you're teaching the words that are going to be found in a text, it almost always enhances kids' comprehension. All right? They also found that that active processing is much more effective than just getting kids to do a definition, just giving them the definition or giving them a dictionary. It's everything that I've shared with you in the last 4 weeks, or at least in the last 2 weeks, in terms of instructional techniques, are interactive. Kids are talking and doing them together. And so that kind of active processing was always more effective than just giving kids, here are the words and the definition, or look up the words in the glossary. What they also found is that the multiple exposures, follow-up lessons, are essential. However, what is still not quite known, and which varied from study to study, was how many follow-ups, how many times do the kids need to see the words or do something with the words. That is still ambiguous. We still don't know the number, but we know more than once, more than an introduction, probably aiming for like two or three and maybe more times for those that are more complex terms or are terms which are less concrete. We also know that strategies that teach students to self-monitor understanding and to use multiple strategies flexibly during reading to solve word meanings are promising. So we do know that, you know, the main thing is we want kids to be monitoring their understanding and not afraid to admit they don't understand something or that they don't know the meaning of the word. That acknowledgement and saying, I don't know this, or when I'm reading, ooh, I better stop because I don't understand this word, or I don't understand this phrase, or I don't understand the academic language. Remember, in our very first session, we talked that academic language is more than just the words. I don't understand. Science texts are written different than social studies texts, are written different than literary texts. And so we want kids to be stopping and monitoring and not afraid to admit that they don't understand something. And we want to encourage that as part of this process. What they also found is that there is limited evidence that teaching meanings of large numbers of just general vocabulary words makes an impact on comprehension. So, you know, I think a lot of schools want to do due diligence to their vocabulary instruction. And so they buy some commercial programs, well-intentioned, using valued budget money for a program. However, what the evidence finds is that it doesn't make much of an impact if the words are not connected to what you folks are teaching. If they're not connected to your science unit, to your social studies or your civics unit, or to your ELA, to that book club book that the kids are reading, if they're just lists of words that you think are just, you know, good for a vocabulary diet, it's not going to make much of an impact according to the existing research. And also, there's no evidence that just teaching one or two strategies for solving word meanings will influence that broader general comprehension. Yes, it's worthwhile to teach our morphemes that are seen. It's worthwhile to teach our context clues. But we really do not want to underestimate the value of doing a thorough job and an active job of devoting some time to those units of those target words that you have selected for a learning unit in your disciplinary area. Now, I do want to share with you that I know that many of you that I've seen signing up each week for this webinar are going to be taking this information back to other adult learners, all right? Hopefully, all of you will be sharing this with the teachers at your school, I want you to know that these PowerPoints are now public domain. Feel free to use the same 4 PowerPoints that I created for you. Feel free to rearrange them that fits whatever, if you're teaching them at your school or if you're a BOCES person who's going to be doing some professional development workshops and doing this all 4 within a single day, there are lots of options you can choose. You could choose to do all of this in a professional learning community, okay? Do some staff-wide, like I did, like everything that's in the slides is appropriate for all disciplines. So if you're at a school, you could do an hour each week with everybody and do it just the way I did it, all right? Leaving time for people to go back and to actually, like I did, after week 1, go back and pick a unit, use this technique to select vocabulary. Week 2, okay, now you're going to, you know, let's take 2 weeks. We're not going to meet again for 2 or 3 weeks because you're going to have time to develop some assessments for that unit that you're developing. Now, also, I have put in your folders for this week, I have put descriptions of every single activity that we have done over the last 2 weeks that I've shared with you. So that's 8 activities, 8 different vocabulary instructional techniques. And I have put them in a folder for you with descriptions. So you can either teach them the way I did with you, although you'll be in person. So I hope you would have people be doing them and doing the activities and talking in a way that this format does not allow. All right. However, you could also do those materials from session 3 and 4. You could do it the way I did it with MS 447. When I was at their school, we did it as a jigsaw. So, for example, the whole faculty was divided up into tables, and each table, we had 8 tables. We did all 8 strategies in 1 1-hour session, believe it or not. Each table was assigned 1 of the strategies, and they thought about, and they also had somebody from our leadership team, our MTSS leadership team on there, but they each talked about when they've used this, they looked at resources they could use, and then they shared it out with others, all right, or did it in a traditional jigsaw, your choice. But those were done, but when we did sessions 3 and 4 with the instructional activities, we did them in a very hands-on active way. And I would encourage you, if you're sharing them either in single hour or single PD sessions across, say, a couple months, or if you're doing them as a workshop at a BOCES workshop and you're using them that, you know, in the afternoon, you're doing those very, very hands-on. Then if you're in a school, let's say you're a school principal and you're in a school, then what I'm suggesting to the schools I'm working with, I've got 2 schools doing this right now. Those 2 schools have already done what you've done. They've done this information is generic for everybody. These four PowerPoints, all right? Generic, every science teacher, math teacher, social studies teacher would benefit by it. Then what they're going to do is they have bought the Ogle et al. Book, all right? They've bought that book. And so now what they're going to do as their next step to get teachers to really own this, if teachers aren't owning some of this, it's because we haven't presented it to them in a way that makes them feel confident and makes it palatable, all right? So the next step is give them the single chapter from the Ogle book that talks about their content area. So in addition to all this generic stuff that we've been doing for 4 weeks, in that book, there is a chapter just for ELA teachers that talks about equally, say, 5 or 6 activities that are specific to ELA. Then there's another chapter in that book that is specific to science. Here are some great ways to nurture vocabulary development in a science classroom. Then there's another chapter for the math teacher. Then there's another chapter for the social studies teacher. So I would recommend that the next logical follow-up is to use a book club format or a professional learning community format so that the teachers in that discipline read the chapter that is specific to their content area and discuss it like a book club. Finally, you have consecutive PLCs, four PLCs, which are unit planning and writing sessions to actually add that academic vocabulary instructional techniques into their units. But even that alone won't cut it. The administrators, I was so glad to see some administrators attending these webinars because you hold such power in your hands. And so just a drop-in visit, oh, look at that word wall, taking a picture of it, doing things like that to know that we're not dropping the ball on this. This is not just something like from an outside person who comes, which, you know, we love when we have the rock stars like Doug Fisher come. That is a wonderful, wonderful experience, and it's inspiring. But the reality is Doug knows this. I know this. Unless we follow up in our schools and are doing something with professional learning communities and that is also accountable and that the administrator is expecting to see this and is targeting, okay, now we're really working on vocabulary. So I'm going to do some drop-in visits. I'm going to see the word walls. I'm going to see when I do your observation, oh, I'd love to see what you all are doing with some vocabulary. When can I come and when does it work for you for me to see that? So really knowing that we're not dropping the ball on this. This is not just a big show that Kay is doing or that so-and-so is doing or that our literacy coach is doing. This is a team effort. And then finally, the last thing would be a faculty PD cross-disciplinary bragging session to share the application of what they've done in their classroom. It's sort of like we do that with the kids. We do the museum and the gallery walks with our students. Faculty need to do the same thing, but that also serves to let them know that we're expecting you to use this and be accountable and to share how it worked for you or what you had to tweak so that someone else can learn from you, because our teachers are such wonderful resources, are so hardworking. And so let's take advantage of the rock stars in our own schools and let them share. And so that's really how you do, you know, that kind of successful professional development so that we all embrace it and all find it helpful. So with that, and so again, as I said, all the materials are in those folders for you. Today's folder includes all, it includes the story flu, so that you could actually use that flu story. You wouldn't use that with kids, but you would use that in a PD. You could use that. It's ready to go for you to take and run with it and use it in the PD that you provide. Compliments of me. So I'm so sad that we are at the end of our time together. If there are some questions that you have, do you have any questions about our PD series, about the PD that we did today, or the turnkey, you know, how to turnkey this with people that you're working with? Any questions, and all questions are welcome. And while you're writing your questions, do know that if you really need extra help, I am more than happy and willing to come out to your school. And actually, I do this for school. You know, I'm doing it for a school way out on Long Island. I'm doing it for a school in Brooklyn. And then in the spring, Williamsville invited me to come up there. And they said, you know, we really can't put the webinars in our time schedule right now, but could you come up here to Buffalo and do it for us as a single day professional development? And so know that's always an option for you as well. So are there any questions? I have just really admired your persistence. It's been wonderful to see the same names appearing and then to meet some of you in the Doug Fisher sessions. It's really been a highlight of my fall this year. Such a wonderful group.
I see a few people are typing, but in the meantime, the folder that Dr. Saul referenced is all on our webpage, so the link is posted in the chat if you need to go out and get any of those resources if you haven't done that already. I also just put the link to the survey, so if we complete that, we will be doing the book drawing, and I'm excited to have another winner. So please take a few minutes to complete that. The feedback really does help us as we move forward on planning webinars, and also remember that our Universal Design webinar will be taking place November 5th, and information will be on our webpage in a day or so.
Molly, do you know who is conducting that?
Yes. Let me pull up the flyer again. There are two members from CAST. Let me see. Bill Wilmot and Melissa Sanji. From the CAST organization.
Well, I'll have to check those out. That sounds very good. Okay, folks, thank you very much, and please do fill out the evaluation, and hopefully I'll see you on some future webinars. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Another great webinar. We appreciate it.
And thank you, Molly.
Good night, everybody.